A stylized audience watches a screen, IFB Irish Film Board, board Scannán Nathairn. Words glow in thick mist. Treasure Entertainment.
Okay, Ned, you've got 90 minutes. Any subject you like, your time starts now.
A hand writes on a legal pad, spelling out the words, Handsome Devil, at the top of a page.
We all have one thing we're ashamed of. The memory of one moment so embarrassing, we don't think we'll ever get over it. A moment that still wakes us at 4 a.m.
A red-haired boy.
Sweating. My terrible moment happened because I was afraid. I was afraid because I lost the only true friend I'd ever known. People do bad things out of fear.
On a country road, a man drives beside a smoking woman, the red-headed teen boy in the back seat.
For me, the good life ended when Mum died a few years back. Suddenly, Dad married Natalie. They were living in Dubai, and I was in boarding school in the middle of nowhere, a school where rugby was a religion, where I was persecuted daily.
I mean, legally, you guys shouldn't be able to force me to go to school. Legally, I'm basically an adult.
You're basically an adult, but you're actually like 16.
Yes, 16 is your actual age, which is why the idea of us letting you leave school is absurd.
So you're pretty much sending me to jail.
But even prisoners make an effort to fit in. They do jigsaws together. They ping pong with each other.
Could you please listen to yourself? The briefest of moments.
Excuse me.
Ned, conforming is part of being a grown-up, and letting you leave school early would be sending you to jail in a way. Boys who leave school at your age doom themselves to a life of sweeping up supermarket floors.
Dad was obsessed with the guys who swept supermarket floors.
And then crime, naturally. Natalie, Adam Quinn's boy. He was expelled from school last year. Now, apparently, he's a bum in Paris.
No way, really?
Yes. Reading his poetry on the metro for money. Practically begging. And it's desperately sad. So just think about that.
A bum in Paris? I would have loved that. But was I bad enough to get expelled? This year would tell.
Board Scannán Nathairn, the Irish Film Board presents. Now, Natalie lights another cigarette while sitting in the parked car, and the dad hands his son two bags from the trunk. Made in association with RTE. The redhead carries his luggage away from the car in slow motion, his eyes scanning back and forth as his father slams the trunk closed behind him. With Windmill Lane Pictures. The boy furrows his brow as he strides his lanky frame past a green field and toward a sprawling, ivory-covered building surrounded by male students. A Treasure Entertainment production. Blue and yellow text appears, Handsome Devil. The words are divided by a vertical yellow line. The line spreads, revealing the bustling foyer of the boarding school. The redhead pauses there, then continues forward. Behind him, a curly-haired teen in a school blazer trots confidently down the stairs, grabbing a ukulele from another student as he passes. He saunters up behind the redhead, who searches through names on a bulletin board, until his finger stops on Ned Roach.
Have my own room. Magical.
Did you just say you have your own room? No way. Let me see.
The curly-haired boy leans in.
Oh.
Ladies and gentlemen, my tormentor-in-chief.
Okay. Maybe the reason you have your own room is so nobody gets bummed, you know, in the middle of the night.
And hello to you too, Weasel. I trust the summer treated you well.
I trust the summer treated you well.
Oh, you are an utter bender. Weasel, you fucking legend. I haven't seen you in ages.
Another boy pulls Weasel away.
Back to jail. And just like prison, if nobody likes who you really are, then buddy, you better hide yourself away.
In a classroom.
Here's an example. For English essays. I stole the lyrics from obscure songs the very old Mr. Futrell would never know. But it was a private joke. Nobody else knew the song, or cared one way or the other. Everyone at Woodhill College was obsessed with rugby. And I didn't hate rugby, but what happened if you didn't love it? Yeah, that sound means gay. I have no idea why it means that, but believe me, I heard it a lot.
A sex ed class.
I should explain. You all recognize this. Gay means crap, bad, or different. And the fear of being in any way different ran through our school from top to bottom.
Ask the lady to dance, and then, you know, you get into a sort of a... Remember, this kind of that, right? But do not do that.
He cups his own rear.
So, any questions?
There were other kinds of schools, of course. Cool, modern-day schools, where anything went. But not here.
A student wets a topless photo in a sink and tosses it to the ceiling of his classroom. Then the teacher arrives.
Today, we're going to be looking at...
Talking about sexual identity, to anyone in our school, that was like staring at the sun.
Anyone have any idea?
The photo lands breasts up in front of the teacher.
It seemed you could be whoever you liked out in the world.
Boys taunt Ned.
But our school wasn't a part of the world.
Firstly, some sad news.
An assembly.
After a short illness, our dear colleague and friend, Glenn Futrell, has passed on.
A memorial photo shows Ned's English teacher.
Eunice! Which will mean some reshuffling in the English department. In honor of our recently deceased English teacher, one victorious student will be chosen to represent the school in the national essay writing competition. There is a first prize of $5,000. As a donation to the school. Now, rugby.
The mustachioed man at the mic wiggles his eyebrows.
Did you ever meet an adult who wishes they were a kid again? That was our headmaster, Walter.
The four other teachers on the stage smile.
This school has won 17 senior cups. But it has been a long decade since the last. We have a fine crop of players. And the entire school needs to support our fantastic coach, Mr. Pascal O'Keefe.
A bearded man punches the air.
As for this guy, well, rumor had it Pascal's wife left him because he was too obsessed with rugby.
An older woman and a boy with long bangs peer in the hall.
And that? That's the guy who changed everything.
Later, the boy with bangs sits in a hallway. Then two students wedge another boy into a trash bin as he watches.
Guys!
Walter and the older woman step into the hall.
It is a lovely school for Connor, because of being sporty and
Now, young man, before we show your mother your digs, I need you to promise me something. I'm told you left your old school for repeated and persistent fighting. We're happy to educate you, as long as that kind of behavior remains in your past. Understood?
Connor nods morosely.
Follow me.
The three start down the hall.
Get out of that bin, Kennedy, and cease your egregious play acting.
Yes, sir, because it's all my fault.
Apology accepted.
Our coach, Pascal O'Keefe, is a former pupil.
That's exciting.
We have a fantastic crop of players this year. Men sane and corporeis sane. Just one more tilt at the title. Training starts tomorrow. Do not be late for Pascal. Nice boy called Ned is this room. Parents live in Dubai.
The headmaster opens the door to Ned's poster-filled room.
What sort of a boy is Ned?
Voracious reader.
One poster features two androgynous figures kissing.
Well, I'll, leave it to say your farewells.
Walter nods and steps away from the mother and son.
Honey, I'm sorry your dad didn't make it. He wanted to. He's just...
He's drunk.
He's busy. He's incredibly busy with work. You know how hard he works. It's flat out.
The brooding young man glances at his mom.
Mr. Locke.
She hugs him, and he half-heartedly returns her embrace. She pulls away from Connor and leaves him alone. He gazes at photos, drawings, and song lyrics around him. Out on the staircase, Ned passes by Connor's tearing-up mother.
You okay?
She nods and continues on as students fight on the landing above. Now Ned stares into his room, watching Connor do push-ups. Connor glances up. The two young men lock eyes.
Give me a second.
Ned spins away. Then Kennedy struggles in the bin outside Walter's office.
I can't share with a guy like him.
Ned, Ned, Ned. You know, my time in the Boy Scouts, as a young man, was rewarding on so many levels. Bivouacking, orienteering, the nautical art of making knots. And although I may not be able to remember how to fashion a round turn and two half hitches, I will never forget the lasting bond of friendship that ensued.
Sir, the Geneva Convention.
My decision is final. Leave.
The redhead turns and trudges off.
Yes, this was a blow, but it wasn't as if the rugby team would be congregating in my bedroom.
We heard you were coming. Yes, you're younger than us, but Pascal says, if you're good enough, you're old enough.
Look, Connor, this is the last year for this dream team, all right? We all leave in the summer.
I've been captain twice, and I'm not allowed to repeat again, unfortunately.
So, we have to win this thing this year. If I'm being honest with you, I don't think the chance is going to come around again for this club. Training starts tomorrow at 6. Do not be late.
Do not be late.
Seriously. Big no-no.
Ned strolls into his bedroom, where the rugby team is congregating.
This is your roommate?
Pointing at Ned.
I was really starting to wonder for a second. I mean, this is a picture of two guys wearing the face off each other, Connor. I mean, really?
That's not mine.
Weasel reaches for the poster, and Ned grabs him.
Touch me, homo, and I call rape, okay? Jesus, Weasel, come on.
Weasel, give it a rest.
Connor, you're going to have to seriously consider moving rooms, okay? You're going to get AIDS in here. We cannot have a teammate giving us AIDS in the middle of a scrum.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure that's how the HIV virus is transmitted.
Go fuck yourself, Spooner. And as for you...
He turns to Ned.
You just made Weasel's shit list.
Weasel pops in a mouth guard. The teammates all head out after Weasel. Then the former captain turns to Connor.
Come on.
Connor glances over at Ned, then picks up his sneakers and follows the players out. Ned watches his roommate leave and picks up his ripped poster. Later, in the headmaster's office.
You were wondering if there's another room you could sleep in. Well, what's wrong with the room that you already have?
My roommate.
Connor steps closer to Walter's desk.
As a new boy, it can be... It can be...
Walter tilts his head.
It can be what?
It's just... You can be...
Go back to your room, Connor. Good man.
The young man rocks from one foot to the other, then turns and trudges off. Now, Connor steps back in his room to see Ned has built a barrier down the center out of luggage and furniture.
The Berlin Wall was built overnight. The world woke up the morning after, and there it was. Now, I'm no communist, but there's a lot to be said for acting decisively.
A sign on the barrier has an arrow pointing left under the name Ned, and an arrow pointing right under the word him.
Press fast forward, press rewind.
Sun streams through the windows as a man with a high forehead and intense dark brown eyes strides down one of the boarding school's hallways.
First one in, last one out.
He turns his compact body and saunters through a classroom doorway, slamming the door shut behind him.
Did you know lizards can regrow their tails? That's how it was in our school, with English teachers. One dies, another grows in its place. No big deal.
The new teacher writes Mr. Sherry on the whiteboard.
Daron Finnegan! Did you make that absurd noise?
Sherry strolls down the center aisle between desks.
Age 16. Birthday, June. Shoe size 8.5. Fan of Formula One car racing. Allergic to milk. And therefore all dairy, Sherry. Father, a management consultant. Mother, stay-at-home mom. Bedwetter, I'd imagine. And a coward, for sure. Congratulations, Mr. Finnegan. You are today's winner of the Witless Tool Competition. Be gone.
He guides the boy from the room, then turns back to the class.
Anyone else?
He squats to peer at the nearest student.
No.
Good. How did I learn all that stuff about Darren?
I read it.
And I read about each and every one of you similarly. There is no limit to what you can learn from reading. And with that in mind, I'm sending you an essay. The essay is due on Friday, and the title of the essay is A Family Member. Oh. And before you consider how dull and how asinine the title of that essay is, let me tell you that I'm aware how dull and asinine it is, and I want you to own the dullness! Reveal to me who you are. If you dare.
He holds up his index finger.
In the meantime, we're going to be reading Lord of the Flies by Golding, a cautionary tale about giving power to an impressionable mass of fragrant and unkempt urchins. Not that that's ever going to happen in my class. Okay, books open, please. Page one.
Ned glances up at the teacher as another boy reads.
Boy with fair hair lowered himself down the last few feet of the rock and began to pick his way toward the lagoon. Though he had taken off his school sweater...
Later, Ned practices guitar in his room.
Go away! Thank you!
Whoa!
Sherry bursts in.
Sorry, sir. I thought you were a pupil.
No.
He motions at the makeshift barrier.
What's with the Berlin Wall?
That's a matter of necessity.
Right. Who's your roommate?
Honestly, I don't know.
Right. Well, I've got a delivery for,
The teacher holds up two books, then drops them on top of the barrier.
No way you can make him feel welcome, no?
Yeah, you see, he's a rugby player, so believe me, my friendship would be a hindrance.
It's quite a persecution complex you got going on there.
Thank you.
You gonna let me hear something?
Well, I can't play, and even if I could, I don't think I'd play anything that you'd like.
Let's play something.
Ned leans over the guitar, setting his fingers in place.
Okay, so that's D.
That's D.
Sherry's eyes narrow.
Is D your own?
D is my only chord, yeah.
I see. Okay, well, lift that finger up. That one. Higher. There. Yep. I play. Now you know another chord.
He walks out.
See ya.
The corners of Ned's mouth rise. Now, Connor sprints alongside a long building and grabs a door handle. Inside a changing room, he hurriedly pulls on rugby shoes as Pascal, the coach, ambles slowly up behind him, hands in his pockets.
Sir, I'm really, really sorry. I know I'm late. It's just I couldn't find my boots. I thought I put them in my bag, and I thought my bag was in my classroom, but I thought...
Connor, relax. You're new. It happens. Lads are running drills out there. Get ready. I'll go out with you. Get you introduced.
Pascal scratches his thick brown beard.
Once you cross that white line, Connor, I want you to concentrate on just one thing. Express yourself.
Connor peers at the coach from under his bangs.
Good to go?
Yeah.
After you.
Out on the rugby pitch, Connor and Pascal cross the white line and walk over to the group of teammates all standing in a circle.
Everyone, this is Connor. Connor won the Junior Cup with St. Bart's last year, kicking 19 points in the final, was it? I asked him up with us seniors so he sees what we're made of. Give him something to aspire to. Also, give Wallace a bit of competition.
You've met our captain, Victor. Apart from him...
Far too many names to remember, but I'll give you the gist. Keith Chaffrey, prop. Tom Quinlan, current place kicker. We get our speed from this fella. Scrum half, one. Two. Chief wrecking ball.
He points at Weasel.
Okay. Line out. First against seconds. Connor, play a 10 for the first. Wallace. Where's Wally?
Here.
Defend it.
Don't worry about me. I got you.
Weasel pats the short boy's pale cheek.
Let me
Weasel, in a blue head guard, winks toward Wallace, and they both slide their mouth guards in. Connor catches the ball, drop punts it away, then Weasel slams into him. The coach watches Connor roll onto Weasel and punch the boy in the face.
Maybe Friday,
teammates pull Connor off. Pascal laughs. The coach stifles his smile.
Wallace, come back in for Connor. Connor, take a break.
Take a break. We've only just begun.
Okay.
Reset!
Connor pops his mouth guard back in, the knuckles of his hand bloody. Connor sprints forward, catching the ball, passing it, then catching it again. Pascal's eyes widen as he watches his new player dance across the pitch with the ball, passing and punting. Then the whistle falls from the coach's open mouth. Connor wends his way expertly across the pitch toward the try line, grinning broadly as he slips by the defending players and scores a try. In the showers, Weasel checks his nose in a mirror.
Is it broken?
Oh, of course it's fucking broken.
Well done, lads. Yeah, well played.
Don't worry about that, Weasel. You never were a looker. anyone seen Connor Masters?
He never came in.
Pascal glances outside, smiling to see the new kid striding away as night falls over the campus. A split screen shows Connor practicing goal kicking in the dark, his shot perfectly bisecting the posts. Then, in English class.
Reveal to me who you are,
I said. I set an essay title for you because I wanted to find out about you, and there are some excellent essays, but there was one that stood out above all. Ned Roach. Do you want to get up here and read it in front of the class?
I'm actually okay. Thanks. I mean, thank you, but I just prefer not to.
I appreciate that.
Sherry gazes down at the essay.
But I think you should.
The teacher holds it out, and Ned reluctantly rises.
The next person to make a single solitary sound of any sort is in hideous trouble. Good, Ned.
The redhead trudges to the front of the class and takes his essay from the teacher. Sherry sits at his nearby desk as Ned stares nervously down at the bound papers now in his hands. He glances up at his fellow students.
A family member. I have this cousin whose name's Kevin, and I'm pretty sure he's destined for heaven. He's always spotlessly dressed.
Sherry pulls out a
clean
speaker.
Clean and neat and totally smooth. He likes to wear this fur-lined sheepskin jacket.
Keep going, please.
Kevin, start the same. My perfect cousin.
Connor looks around the room.
He doesn't. He's his father's pride and joy. His mother's little golden boy. Economics. He thinks that I'm a bit of a cabbage because I hate university.
Stop.
Ned glances at the teacher, then plods back to his desk. Mr. Sherry flips through the pages of Ned's homework, then glares up at the class.
Listen to you, the baying crowd, bleating like sheep. Why do you assume that this lesson isn't for you?
Ned bows his head, his hands clasped on the desk before him.
Never, ever, ever use a borrowed voice.
He throws the bound papers.
You're all individual.
Sherry runs fingers through his hair exasperatedly.
Stop! Stop!
The class freezes.
You spend your whole life being someone else. Who's going to be you?
Connor and Ned stare at their teacher.
Get out!
The students file out, and Sherry sits at his podium, rubbing his forehead. In the dorm room, the sign on the barrier now reads Ned over the left arrow and press-ups over the right one. The boys sit on their respective sides. Connor raises his head up and peeks over the top of the barricade. Ned glances up at his roommate.
Turn it in?
No, not that.
They look at each other, questioningly.
Today, that was pretty cool. I like the song.
Could you go straight to hell, please?
I liked it a lot. Why'd you like so much old stuff?
Well, because modern life is rubbish.
Hear that?
Connor nods, and Ned gazes downward, not meeting the other boy's eyes.
So I saw Weasel's face.
How'd you know I did that?
Word gets round. Even to me.
Can I ask you a question? It's personal.
The redhead nods very slightly.
Are you gay?
Don't worry, Connor. I'm not going to bum you in the night, all right?
No, sir.
Was that it? That was your question, was it?
Connor shrinks down back behind the barrier and sits on his bed. The two young men perch facing each other on their beds, separated by the homemade wall.
It's not really the music. It's more the story. How someone can write about themselves like that, about their family. It's mad, isn't it?
Well, yeah, the madder the better.
They look at each other, their faces visible through a narrow vertical gap in the barricade.
So you're not just taking the piss?
Connor stands up again.
I like the song.
All right, follow me then.
Ned leads the way as they leave the room.
So tell me, you must have thought about in advance.
Now backstage, they step over braces holding up flats and drop down into a storage room below the stage. The cramped, graffiti-covered room is filled with folding chairs and storage crates.
You know this is here.
Ned pulls out a record album labeled The Blades.
Found these last year.
Vinyl.
Yeah, look at those faces.
What were they thinking?
Well, none of them ever cared about the stuff that matters here, that's for sure.
The redhead picks up a guitar and turns away.
Man, I can't wait to get out of here.
What are you going to be?
I am basically unemployable, but I'll be free.
Yeah, my dad and I used to sail before he became interested in other things. I remember sitting at the front of the boat. That felt free, like flying.
You still got the boat?
It's still there, I think, rusting away.
So what's it like to punch someone in the face?
Connor takes the guitar.
Whoa, show me that. How do you know a chord?
I can like music, you know. We're not all the same.
So you don't have a shit list?
Connor looks toward the floor.
I think you've been taken off that list.
Ned holds the guitar again, focusing on his finger placement. Connor laughs. A split screen shows Connor on the left going for a run, while Ned on the right sits in a field trying to roll a joint.
I never knew I'd been lonely until I found a friend. Not that Connor and I were peas in a pod. I mean, I'd never met someone who liked to run around as much as I like to sit down and do nothing at all. My defenses were coming down, and I'd never say it out loud, but it felt pretty good. Shake it up. Weasel had suddenly stopped bullying me, and I no longer dreamed of being expelled.
He dismantles the Berlin Wall.
Despite my best intentions, I began to feel like I fit in.
Outside.
All packed?
What happened?
Ned's shirt.
I was pocketed.
Again,
How many times is that since September?
Three. No. Four. Yeah. How many have you had?
I've never been pocketed.
You've never been pocketed?
I've never been pocketed.
That's not right. Anyway, this is for you.
He hands over a bag.
What is it?
Birthday present.
Really?
Yeah, well, I wasn't gonna get you anything, obviously, but my wicked stepmother said, seeing as we're roommates and all, you know, probably should. It's a harmonica.
Thanks, Ned.
Oh, I have one more present for you, actually. Yeah.
He jams his fingers in Connor's shirt pocket.
You wouldn't dare.
Wouldn't I, though?
Ned.
Ned yanks off the pocket.
Have a good birthday. Ugh.
A split screen shows both Ned and Connor holding skulls and reciting an English class.
Alas, poor Yorick.
I knew him, Horatio. A fellow of infinite jest.
Mr. Sherry began to work with us as a team.
Yeah.
And we all loved him for it. Still, when an annual variety show was announced at the local girls' school, no one stuck their hand up. But Sherry had heard us messing around on those old guitars and said, insisted that Connor and I should play a song.
Down in the storage room under the stage, Ned and Connor practice as Sherry strolls in, grimacing.
Hi, fellas, how's it going?
Extremely bad.
Thanks.
And why is that?
Well, we're not these deadly Spanish guitar players. We can't do an instrumental. We have to do a song, but neither of us want to be the singer.
I'm definitely not doing it.
No, me neither.
And why not the both of you?
What, like Simon and Garfunkel?
Yeah, like Simon and Garfunkel.
The teacher nods.
I don't think so.
Oh, I'm not cool enough for you, Ned, no?
Honestly, no, not really.
Well, you young man need to learn about what is much more important than cool, and that is...
Sherry puts a record on the turntable.
What is beautiful?
The boys look at each other.
Something's going on. Change is taking place. Children smiling in the street have gone without a trace. The street used to be full. It used to make me smile.
Sherry motions up with one hand. Down with the other.
High, low.
He steeples his fingers.
Oh, but sir, it's so high.
So high. Don't gallop, Mr. Hines, you're not a horse.
Victor leans into the room.
Connor, training. 10 minutes, man. Come on.
Connor dashes off. A split screen shows the rugby team playing on the left, while Ned writes on the yellow legal pad on the right.
The school rugby team embarked on a long, unbeaten run. And the local papers put it down to my friend, the new star out half. But the players worshipped Pascal.
Stop!
Now, at training.
Number 9, congratulations! You have an announcement to make?
No.
You do.
No.
You do! God, number 9!
Everybody!
I just noticed number 9 tackling, and it's clear that he has something else in his mind. So I'm guessing it's because you and your boyfriend are engaged to be married!
What the hell are you doing breastfeeding the tackling bag?
Hit it!
Spainer clutches the tackling bag, and Pascal slams it into him. The boy falls.
You afraid to be hit? Go sign up for the school opera.
I'm sure they're short a few tavern wenches. Everyone, gather in.
Time to get serious.
The teammates all take a knee in a circle.
It was the nature of this school that you hear a lot of talk about opening your mind and the value of a rounded education.
Bullshit! We're about to walk onto a battlefield. And once we do, the last thing we need is empathy for a fellow man, to be feeling things. Connor is leading us out, and he will have a target on his back. So from now on, men...
You're not a team.
It's a war zone. And you're in the army.
Connor stands beside his coach, and the two stare at the team. Back in the storage room, Connor practices. Then Ned sneaks up behind him and blows on his ear.
Shouldn't you be asleep?
Shouldn't you?
Ned sits.
I'm not the one playing in the quarterfinal tomorrow.
That is why I'm not sleeping. I can't. I'm nervous.
You're gonna win.
You don't know that.
I don't know the first thing about rugby, but I feel it in my bones.
Connor smiles at his friend.
Are you gonna be there?
It's not really my team.
The rugby player nods, blinks, and looks downward.
This one time, before you came here, one of your teammates flushed my head down the toilet. So that is not going in my autobiography. You're better off without me. I will be rooting for you, though.
Now, the headmaster ushers students into a bus.
Single file, gentlemen, single file.
The boys climb on, all in blue and yellow striped shirts, except Ned. Later, the boys hop off the bus, and Ned slips away. The team stream into a changing room after the game, smiling and swinging their fists in the air.
Old man's out at the bar. Says he wants to buy us all a drink.
Connor feigns a smile. In a pub, Connor's dad carries a tray of beers through the crowd.
Coming through. Right here, coming through. Coming through. Here we are. Find yourself, boys. Now, help yourself. Right. Help when you get stuck in, lads.
Connor sips water.
Yeah. Drink with the old man, son.
Fine with water, thanks.
Clear to me, I won't hurt you.
We can't toast the victory without a man's drink, huh?
He gives his boy a beer, and Connor gazes down at the drink in his hand.
To my son, the athlete, and to all you fine young men. Cheers.
Cheers, boys.
Hey!
Connor lifts the beer to his lips.
Connor later told me that if he hadn't had that first drink, his night would have ended very differently.
Connor and his dad drink, the older man gulping from his glass. Now, Weasel grimaces as he finishes a pint. Victor guzzles beer, Connor giggles as he drinks, and Spainer wears his necktie tied around his head. Pascal tosses back a gulp, and Weasel sidles up to Connor.
Your dad is a complete inspiration.
Outside.
Best thing about watching you play today was realizing that all that rubbish in the last school was just rubbish. That was the real you today, huh? I loved you today. I loved you again. You felt like my son again. Not that idiot from before. But come on, jump in, I'll give you a lift back, huh? We'll have the chats.
I'm getting the train.
Connor spins away from his dad and walks off into the darkness.
Ah. Son.
Elsewhere, Ned dashes to the corner of a building and pees.
After walking for hours, I found a cinema showing a subtitled film about a nun, which was long. I ended up late for the coaches back to school, and that's when I saw Connor. The idea was that I would surprise him.
The redhead zips up and heads back to the street he saw Connor walking down. Ned watches his roommate step past a bouncer to slip into a shadowy corner bar. Ned crosses the street to the place, which has neon pink triangles glowing from its two front windows. The heavy-set bouncer shakes his head.
Far too young. Sorry, pal.
No, he's my friend.
He's older than you.
Wait, what kind of bar is this?
Bar for adults.
Okay. What kind of adults?
Gay adults.
Totally.
Ned shrugs.
Just double checking. Yeah. I'm just gonna wait for him. He'll be out in a second.
Ned nods his head up and down, then takes a step back from the building and looks downward as the bouncer stares at him, stone-faced. The redhead purses his lips and continues slowly nodding. The bouncer raises his eyebrows slightly as a car rolls slowly down the road beside them, headlights reflecting off the damp cobblestones. Ned gazes up at the two windows flanking the doorway, then blinks and looks toward the pavement, eyes wide with realization.
I better head. Yeah, it's getting late.
The boy looks up at the building again, blinking. Then he forces a tiny smile and a curt nod. His eyes remain focused on the bar as he starts to walk away down the dark street.
All this time, I thought I was the only one on the outside. Turns out, I couldn't have been more wrong.
Now Ned rides in an almost empty train car, spinning his ticket relentlessly in one hand. Back at the gay bar, the bouncer continues to stand guard outside between the neon pink triangles. Inside the dark bar, men drink, talk, and kiss. Connor grins as he wends his way through the crowd. His smile falters as he looks across the room and sees Mr. Sherry. Sherry reaches over and pushes a lock of hair behind the ear of the goateed man he's sitting with. The English teacher glances up and spies Connor staring over at him. The boy turns away, and Sherry rubs his own face anxiously, clasps the back of his neck, then squeezes his eyes shut and grimaces. In a train car, Connor slides his palms down his face.
Welcome to the Regional Express. This is the non-smoking.
Behind him, Sherry strides nervously through the empty car and plops down across the aisle from his student.
Hiya, Connor. You're on the train. I nearly missed a bloody train. Oh. So congratulations on today. I believe you played really well.
Thanks, sir. I actually missed a few kicks. Not my best.
Oh, did you? No. Okay. Well, still, you got the quarter...
Semi-finals.
Sherry puffs out his cheeks.
No pressure then.
No.
The teacher looks across at the boy, who isn't meeting his eyes. Sherry opens his mouth to speak, but stops, closing his eyes and clasping a hand over his mouth.
I might have a cup of tea or something.
Connor looks at the older man, who glances around and nods.
I like a cup of tea. Not much of a coffee drinker. But I like a cup of tea or a pot. A nice big pot. Pot of tea. A big pot of tea is your only man.
Sir, before, it's not what it seemed.
What? No.
I was bursting for the loo and it was the nearest bar around.
Yeah, you know my friend there, Connor, he's very
affectionate. Signs out front.
Yeah, it's very, very poorly signposted. He's Italian, you know, he's all over. Jesus. Connor, I think a certain degree of discretion.
I am never going to say anything, sir.
About anything?
Ever.
Ever, sir. Okay, good.
The teacher nods.
Okay. Right.
Sherry scratches his nose, then rubs his face.
I might get a cup of tea. Do you want a cup of tea? Do you want one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sherry heads back down the aisle of the train car. Later, the two stroll up toward the dark school buildings. Above them, Pascal sips a drink and stares down at the shadowy scene from his window. Daylight washes over the school as Ned and Connor sit in the storage room.
Okay, have you learned your part?
I have.
There's no avoiding this any longer, so just go for it. Okay. One, two, three.
Sorry, Connor, before we start...
What?
Just...
Ned leans on his guitar. Connor stares at the other boy. Ned raises his head to lock eyes with Connor, who lifts his chin expectantly.
Nothing.
You sure?
Yeah.
One, two, three, four.
Ned stares intensely at his roommate.
Something's going on. Change is taking place.
You made me do it by myself.
I just got teamwork,
Ned.
Ned nods.
Yeah.
You ready? 1, 2, 3, 4.
Again, Ned stares at Connor.
Something's going on. Changes take.
I thought we agreed that you would go high and I would go low.
We did.
And I thought you said you learned your part.
And I did. I have learned my part. It's just, all I can hear in my head is your voice, and, you know, it makes me want to follow you.
Well, don't sing your own part, or I can go high and you can go low.
No, I can be high.
Okay, then, be high.
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Ned turns from Connor to look down at his own guitar.
Something's going on, change is taking place. Even smiling in the street, I've gone without a trace. The streets used to be full, they used to make me smile. And now it seems that everyone is walking single file.
He was all right.
Ned searches his friend's face. Later, Connor practices goal kicks. He misses, and the coach scratches his neck. The boy tries again. Pascal rubs his eyes and adjusts his stocking cap.
Stop.
He steps up to the boy.
Connor, sport. Kicking. Takes a quiet mind. You need to have nothing going on in there. Okay.
Connor shifts from foot to foot.
So what's eating you?
Sir, sometimes I just feel like a robot. Doing this again and again. A little more to life than...
Pascal's eyes widen.
You have a rare gift. And you need to use it. Well, recently, I've noticed you hanging around with different people. Which is fine, I suppose, whatever. But here's the thing, son. You lie down with dogs, you get fleas. Have you identified the fleas?
Connor looks off, then squints questioningly.
Don't complicate this, son. There's you. And that.
The ball.
And those.
The goalposts.
Now, come on.
The boy looks down at the ball, then over at the elongated H of the goalposts. Pascal watches, his arms crossed, and his eyes narrow. The coach glares at the boy.
Fuck's sake.
In the headmaster's office.
Good morning, Pascal.
Walter.
Question.
Have you run a background check on Dan Sherry?
Why would I do that?
Sherry's not married, is he?
What are you asking?
I don't know what I'm asking, only I'm sure you noticed that Connor Masters' level is dropping. He misses a number of kicks in the match yesterday, and then very late last night, I encounter him sauntering back to school, drunk, in the company of a certain Dan Sherry. I won't shit you, Walter. I'm concerned.
Did you not take the boys for a celebratory glass of beer last night?
Yes, but that was just the...
But nothing. If you don't know what you're asking, Pascal, be careful what you're insinuating.
Walter, I need your support. Everything hinges on this. We, the team, we need it.
Dan Sherry is a teacher in this school, just like you and I. This is the team.
Sherry's like me? I don't think so. Listen, forget it. It's fine. I just wanted to put my concerns on the record in case. That's all.
In case of what?
The coach steps in closer, his bearded face cast downward.
Boys Connor's age are highly impressionable. You know this.
certain types of people as teachers around kids, once you know for certain that those certain types of people are those certain types of people, I mean, I would consider myself a Christian and a liberal, But those certain aforementioned types of people, those certain types of behaviors are seriously not cool. Not cool near children. You know this.
Thank you, Pascal.
I mean, you have to know that, Walter.
Thank you, Pascal.
Thank you, Walter.
Now, Sherry stands on a building across from a handball court.
Okay. This is a lesson in projection. What? In projection? Yes? Move back.
Ned and Connor back up.
Keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. Stop, 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 stop. Okay. When you sing tomorrow, you can't whimper like some weird little field mice. Okay? So you've got to project! Reveal to me who you are! If you dare! Let your voices bounce off the walls! Right, begin.
The boys play inside the cement handball alley.
I can't hear this. At all. What? Louder. Yes, louder. The streets used to be full. They used to make me louder, stand. Louder, come on! Now it seems that everyone is walking single file. Better.
Sherry leaves. Then Pascal and Weasel walk nearby.
I just definitely working for doing, you know, flexibility, conditioning, and...
That's your out half there.
Weasel peers around the cement wall of the handball alley and glances at the two guitar players rehearsing.
Any idea why Connor left his old school?
No.
You have a cousin in St. Bart's, don't you?
Well, Dave's actually a second cousin. But actually, I was meant to go there myself, but... when my dad died, we...
He's letting all our work go to waste. I wouldn't be happy about that if I was on his team. Matter of fact, I'd be raging.
The coach lopes off, and Weasel watches him, sliding his mouthguard in. Later, in the showers, Weasel leans in as Connor washes himself.
Knock, knock. Oh, there's Connor. Hey, can I ask you something?
Yeah,
why are you hanging out with that freak Ned?
That freak Ned is my mate.
Your mate how?
He's my roommate, Weasel.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Everything okay up there?
Everything's really good, Connor. Just, I've a cousin in St. Bart's.
Connor looks away.
Well, second cousin. But I know everyone says that you left your old school because, I don't know, you were fighting all the time. But I was talking to him, and I was wondering, what was the reason, you know, for all this fighting? Why the fighting, you know?
What do you want, Weasel?
Connor, I promised my father on his deathbed that I would do everything in my power to win that cup. I'm not the only one that's noticing you're spending a lot of time with the wrong kind of people.
Connor's eyes narrow.
What we're going to do is, you're going to pick a company a little bit better. You're going to focus on the semi-final, and we'll let the rumors from your old school be rumors from your old school.
Connor nods reluctantly.
Yeah, good. Good chat. Good chat.
Now alone, Connor rubs his mouth, then slaps the metering valve of the shower, briefly turning the water back on. The buildings of the campus glow in bright morning light. In the boys' dorm room, Connor's bed is empty.
When I woke up on the day of the talent show and there was no sign of Connor, I wasn't that surprised. If you play for the rugby team, you're up early for training.
The coach slaps a player.
You look up! Eyes up, every one of you!
Jack Clamour.
Connor's not at his desk.
You get to skip all sorts of classes, especially when it gets to the semi-final. You're carrying the hopes of the school on your shoulders, you see. Is an education more important than that?
Silhouetted by the sun, Connor practices a goal kick, sending the ball soaring perfectly between the posts.
But I was worried by 6 p.m.
Young girls cartwheel across the talent show stage. Backstage, Ned and Sherry stand in the wings.
Okay, look, he's not coming.
Sir, I can't do it.
You can. You can do it.
So give it up for Clinton.
Clinton creates an isolated rolling square with his arms and shoulders, then shifts smoothly into popping and locking moves. Ned and Sherry's mouths hang open as the performer liquid dances, his arms and torso gracefully twisting like a single contorting snake.
So he's a genius.
He's not a genius.
Clinton leaps up, spinning in the air, then continues expertly undulating his arms.
It's not about who he is. He's a genius. It's about.
The dancer tumbles, then gyrates in an arm wave. Clinton pushes his chin repeatedly, his head pulling back each time as if disconnected from his body.
How's he doing that?
The performer leans right and left, his feet sliding, then finishes with a bow. Sherry and Ned clap as Clinton walks past them into the wings.
All you need to do is go out there and let them hear your voice. That's all. That's all you need to do. Okay.
From two current Wood Hill College students.
Okay, good luck. Don't be nervous. Fine.
Ned steps out, and Sherry covers his eyes. The redhead leans into the microphone.
One of us, actually. Turns out there's only one of us.
He gazes numbly at the full house, then looks down at his guitar and carefully positions his fingers on the strings. Sherry bends forward anxiously.
Something's going on, change is taking place. Children smiling in the street have gone without.
Sherry blinks.
The street used to be full, it used to make me smile. And now it seems that everyone is walking single.
The teacher closes his eyes.
That used to hold me out. And those used to...
Sherry winces and holds a fist to his mouth as Ned continues to play, the boy's eyes fixed glumly at his audience. Outside, on an overcast day, Sherry strides up to where the coach sits watching his team and eating an apple.
Hey there, Pasco. Can I have a word?
It's a free country.
So you must be pretty excited. Quarterfinals.
Semi-final.
Semi-finals. It's exciting, yeah?
There's no time for complacency.
No, quite. So listen, Connor, he didn't show up to sing at the variety show.
He had kicking practice.
Oh, you knew about it?
Well, in semi-final week, our out half had more important things in his mind.
Sure it wasn't you who had other things on his mind, though?
Pascal rises from his seat, throws his apple core into the distance, and turns to stand face to face with his fellow teacher.
I consider you something of a Trojan horse, Sherry.
Not sure where this is going. Yes.
Encouraging Connor Masters to be a singer? 1 week before the semi-final of the Senior Cup?
Come on, I'm trying to help him.
Pascal leans in to Sherry's ear.
You can have the weird ones with the dyed hair and the banjos. I've got fuck all use for them. No interest. I'll say this to you the once. You do well to let that boy focus on his rugby. You get me?
The English teacher raises his eyebrows.
Got an apple in your beard?
Sherry bares his teeth and gives a wide-eyed mock grin, then saunters slowly away. In a Wood Hill corridor, Ned stops alongside an open door to listen to a radio.
Meanwhile, in school's rugby, a tale of two halves for out-half Connor Masters. Inspirational with the ball at hand, but troubled off the kicking tee. Despite those penalty misses, Wood Hill College progresses to their first senior final in over a decade.
Everyone who's ever been young, so that's everyone ever, knows just what humiliation feels like. But worse than the embarrassment was Connor's vanishing act. He had disappeared from my life. And I can't believe I'm about to say this, but I missed him. We were friends. I wasn't going to give that up without a fight.
At night, the handball court glows with flickering firelight as Ned nears from the side.
Paul, who goes there?
Oh, can I help you?
Weasel lifts a torch.
I was looking for Connor. What should I say, well done? Is he in there?
Oh, no, he's actually not in there. Really sorry.
Maybe I'll just check.
Yeah, well, maybe instead of checking, you could just piss off? Does that sound like a plan?
Weasel blocks him.
I'm not going to tell you again to piss off, okay?
Weasel pushes him. Then the redhead awkwardly throws a punch.
Oh, fuck!
Ned crutches his fist. The curly-haired boy rubs his mouth, then punches back. Ned drops, then struggles to his feet. Victor holds Weasel back.
No!
Hey, Ned! Ned, leave it.
Come on, man, just leave him be, will you?
Thank you. I want to go see my friend.
He is not your friend. He's your roommate. He had no choice but to hang out with you. Do you get it?
Connor steps out, gulping down a drink.
Connor, this little, I don't know, vole appears to be very much in love with you. Now, I told him you're not that way inclined, but maybe I'm wrong.
Connor sways slightly, looking downward.
Am I wrong, Connor?
Connor lifts his chin.
Back to the fucking dorm, man.
Weasel leans in.
Yeah. Go back to the dorm, faggot.
Tell them, Connor.
Back to the fucking dorm, man.
Tell them.
I only meant for Connor to tell his teammates that we were friends. But looking back, maybe he thought I knew more than that.
Connor shoves his roommate to the ground. Ned rises to his feet and staggers off into the darkness, then glances back.
Hey, dude, Connor.
Weasel grabs Connor.
This is some Ides and Marsh shit right here, but fuck off, Weasel. See you later, Ned.
The teammates go back to partying in the torch-lit handball alley. Back in the dorm room, Ned shuts the door and trudges over to his bed in dim light. He sits on the edge of the narrow mattress, then lies back against his pillow, a bloody cloth clutched in his hand. He gazes toward the ceiling, his left cheek scabbed and bruised where he was punched, then reaches to turn off the light. Morning light streams into the dorm room. Ned rises from bed to see the room is now partitioned down the center again, this time with a school flag.
Those masterful images, because complete, grew in pure mind. But out of what began? A mound of refuse or the sweepings of a street?
Ned feels his roommate's old mattress kettles, for warmth, then looks at a photo of Connor on his dad's boat
old
named
iron,
Sirius.
Old bones, old rags, that raving slut who keeps the till.
Sherry reads to his class.
Now that my ladder's gone, I must lie down where all the ladders start. In the foul rag and bone shop.
He turns to the classroom door.
Come in.
Two tall boys saunter in carrying megaphones and wearing blue coveralls with the letters WH written on them in yellow tape. They hand Sherry a note and he reads it, then nods resignedly.
Go on, man.
Everyone up! Follow us!
Compulsory cheerleading practice ahead of the final. Pretty much the last place on earth I wanted to be.
The students all file out of the classroom, walking past Mr. Sherry, who nods at Ned as he is shoved along. Inside the auditorium, the boys stand in rows.
Who's ready to make a little history? Born here, we boys are strong. We always play with honor.
Lyrically, these songs left a little to be desired. But on this day, lyrics weren't the problem. It was what was behind them. This wasn't my team.
Ned sees Connor across the room, then gazes down, not singing.
And maybe the idea of getting expelled began to surface once again. Honestly, I don't remember.
One of the tall coverall guys with a megaphone grabs Ned and pulls him out of line, leading him up to the front of the room by his necktie.
Sing! Fucking sing!
He shoves Ned to the floor.
Sing! Sing, you little queer!
They wanted me to sing? I'd sing like a canary.
Ned grabs the megaphone.
I had this big piece of news that I could share, and what was I keeping it for? There was nothing wrong with being different. I knew that.
And why did Connor get to be adored and me bullied when we were both the same? Oh, I'd tell everyone. Then they'd apologize. Then everyone would be on my side for once. Finally, Nettie had the conch.
I'll tell you who's gay.
He climbs on stage.
Oh, I'll tell you who's gay, all right. Connor Masters is gay.
Connor glances around the room as the crowd of boys stare up at Ned.
There it is, folks.
The view freezes.
A terrible memory.
Ned sets the megaphone down on the stage and pats it. Connor looks down toward the floor. Ned, smiling, struts from the stage, crossing the front of the auditorium, and heads down the center aisle between the rows of boys. His smile slowly fades as he lopes down between the students, who all turn to stare at him as he passes. Ned's face drops downward as he walks from the room. In the headmaster's office, Ned sits in front of Walter's desk as the man hangs up his phone.
Your parents are flying home from Dubai tonight. They'll be here first thing in the morning. Ned, I'm aware you haven't had it easy in this school, but grabbing a megaphone, disrupting match preparations, it crosses a line.
Am I expelled?
You sleep in the infirmary tonight. We'll meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m.
The redhead blinks and lowers his bruised face.
I expected so much more from you, Ned. I expected compassion. Towards a boy who was new. Towards a boy who was always going to feel a little different from the rest of you. You of all people I thought could empathize with that.
Ned gazes up at the headmaster, his eyes glistening.
Go on, leave.
A split screen shows Ned sitting on an infirmary bed on one side and writing in the yellow legal pad on the other.
It's funny how it goes, isn't it? Now that I'd seemed to have achieved my goal of getting expelled, there was nothing I wanted more than to go back to being a pupil in this school.
Connor, in his school blazer and tie, knocks on a frosted glass door, and Mr. Sherry opens it.
Hey, Connor. Can I talk to you?
Yeah. Yeah, come again.
The teacher points behind himself.
Oh, I can't let you in here, sorry. Stupid regulations. Come on, we'll go for a walk.
Sherry grabs his coat and keys. They stroll across the dark rugby pitch, the older man leading the way.
So, big day tomorrow, Connor. It's the first final, and how long is it?
Yeah, I can't do it.
That's just nerves. You're a great player, a great team. You're fine.
It's got nothing to do with it. Sir, I saw you with your friend. You were together.
Sherry stops and bites his lip, then tilts his head, turns back, and looks at the boy.
So you saw me with a friend, Connor, so what?
Connor lifts his head slightly and looks around the dark field.
Look, I know it's hard.
Sherry steps closer.
I know. But it gets better. Trust me.
When I'm older.
Yeah, when you're older. Sad fact of life.
I'm just supposed to keep lying.
It's not a lie. It's not necessarily lying if you keep something to yourself.
But if you pretend to be something you're not, then that's a lie. Sir, I remember the lesson with Ned. I remember when you called him out for plagiarizing that song. Don't use a borrowed voice, you said. Find your own voice. Don't be a sheep. Sir, you said that lesson wasn't just for Ned. You said it was for all of us. So why am I exempt? Why am I different from everyone else?
Can't be all things to all men, Connor, at all times. It's not smart.
Why not?
Sometimes you need to keep things hidden away to protect yourself.
The boy inhales deeply and looks away.
There will come a point in the future when you won't have to lie anymore. Trust me.
Will do.
Yeah.
Connor stares coldly at his teacher.
And are you at that point?
This isn't about me.
Sherry bobs his head, his lips tight.
It gets better.
The teacher's dark eyes glisten in the shadows.
It gets better.
He drops his head and shrugs.
That's all I can say to you. Please believe me, Connor.
How on earth can I even begin to believe you?
Sherry smiles wistfully.
Oh, Connor. Connor.
The boy walks away, leaving Sherry on the empty pitch, the goalpost looming in the dark behind him. Daylight streams down the ivory-covered buildings of Woodhill College. Inside, the ornate hallways are deserted.
Jesus Christ, Connor. It's 11:05.
Victor bursts into the empty dorm room. Meanwhile, in Walter's office.
We take this type of transgression very seriously. We'll take the midterm to consider. But punishment will be severe.
I appreciate all that. Thank you.
Ned's dad.
Tell me, though, what happened to my son's face?
Well, we can't get an answer on that, I'm afraid. Ned?
Nothing happened.
Something happened.
Natalie glares.
This is nobody's fault but my own.
More than anything, this is about preserving the ethos of the school.
Sir.
Victor bursts in.
Sorry.
Wait outside, Victor.
The boy starts to leave, then turns back.
I can't, sir. Connor's gone missing.
Ned turns, eyes wide.
He didn't stay in his bed last night. He's gone.
Well, have you told Pascal, I mean, Mr. O'Keefe?
No. I thought I'd come to you first.
Well, tell Mr. O'Keefe I want to see him here immediately. Go on.
Yes, sir.
In the gym, Pascal paces anxiously back and forth in front of his players, who are all dressed in school blazers and blue and yellow neckties. Victor rushes in.
Sir, Mr. Curley wants to see you.
Victor, I thought you were supposed to be Victor and Connor. Where's Connor?
Sir, there was a incident yesterday, and Connor, he's gone missing.
Okay, what do you mean missing, Victor?
Walter wants to see you, sir, now.
Walter wants to see me. Of course, this has to happen today. Thank you, Victor.
Pascal flings a whiteboard marker away and storms off. In the hallway, the coach strides past Mr. Sherry.
Hey, Pascal. Good luck today. You okay?
Pascal stops and turns.
You're delighted, Sherry, huh? What a fucking moon, yeah?
With what?
Connor Masters, huh? Missing on the day of the final.
Sherry's smile fades.
Missing?
Missing! Yes! Part of missing, don't you understand?
The English teacher, his brow furrowed and his mouth open, watches the coach walk angrily away down the corridor. Sherry turns and heads back the way he came, picking up his pace as he goes. Sherry steps into the boys' dorm room. The beds are stripped of linens, and all personal items are gone. The teacher peers behind the door and gazes at the empty room and bare walls. Lost in thought, he backs slowly out the door. Elsewhere, Ned rides in the back seat as his dad drives, and Natalie puffs on a cigarette from her shotgun seat.
When we get back, could I please jump out of town? I really need to do something.
You must be kidding.
Natalie flicks her ashes out a crack in the window.
Look, Dad, I know I'm in trouble, but I wouldn't ask if it wasn't absolutely vital.
Not only are you not jumping out, Ned, you are massively, unbelievably grounded until we can figure out what to do with you.
Ned closes his eyes in frustration and sinks back into his seat. On a train car packed with the Woodhill rugby team, the headmaster walks down the aisle to where Sherry lands.
Stop!
Walter sits down across from the English teacher.
I suppose you heard about Connor Masters.
Yeah.
His parents don't know where he is. Well, I've notified the guards anyway, so...
Sherry scratches the back of his head.
And we have an untested player in out half. I mean, Wallace is a mess.
Oh, who cares about the fucking rugby, Walter? Some boys don't play rugby.
Sherry glares, his dark eyes intense.
What about those boys?
The headmaster blinks thoughtfully and looks down, then locks eyes with Sherry and watches the English teacher rise from his seat. Back in the car, The red-headed boy in the back seat gazes at his father and at Natalie as they roll down a quiet country lane. Ned lifts an eyebrow slyly, and he shifts his duffel bag from the floor up to his lap. His dad grips the wheel, focused on the road ahead. They stop at a light, and Ned dives out of the car.
Ned!
Ned sprints down a road beside a stone wall, his duffel bag slung over one shoulder as his free arm pumps with every long stride.
Connor was always running. I couldn't understand it. But now I finally got it. You have to know that you're running in the right direction.
Now fans file in and fill a stadium's bleachers, many of them teenage girls waving flags and wearing the blue and yellow striped shirts of Woodhill College. The opposing team, in black and white stripes, warms up down on the pitch. The crowd in the bleachers stand, waving their team flags. In a cinder block changing room, Pascal gazes at his players.
Men.
You might be wondering where our out half is. Earlier, as you know, I was called to Mr. Curley's office and informed that the boy has had some kind of breakdown and has gone missing. Today of all days, I know.
He forces a smile.
I don't know if you were aware of the rumors swirling around, but it transpires that he was dealing with serious personal issues. Well, he's missing today, and I want to tell you this.
His eyes twinkle.
We are way better off without him. I mean, we all have personal issues, but look around you. Anyone who can't be trusted to put those issues to one side can't be part of a team. Yeah.
Pascal stares off, his eyes unfocused.
We all have shit that we're going through, you know. Do you run? No. You stay. You stay and you deal with your shit by standing in a field, blowing a whistle in the fucking rain.
Victor looks around confusedly. Out on the pitch, the opposing team practices passing the ball. One of the megaphone boys in blue coveralls leads a cheer. In the bleachers, Mr. Sherry sits down in an uncrowded area. The teacher gazes around at the cheering throng and peers across to see a cherubic young child waving a Woodhill College flag. Sherry looks at the little kid, then to the ground, then stands and walks determinedly out of the bleachers. Meanwhile, Ned rushes down the staircase of a train station overpass, the train pulling away behind him. He climbs over the metal staircase railing to the top of a stone wall, then drops to the ground and trots off, the duffel bag clutched in his right hand. On a boat jetty, Ned rushes past the rows of boats as the sky darkens above him. He glances back and forth to read the name of each craft as he passes by them. At the very end of the dock, he sees a moored sailboat named Sirius. He swings his leg over a canvas gate and climbs on board.
Hello?
Ned squats and peers into the hatch to see Connor sitting on the edge of a bunk in the cramped cabin below.
Can I come in?
What do you want?
I want to apologize for being a terrible friend.
Connor glares at him.
So you knew about me all along?
Ned nods.
I'm so sorry, Connor.
Connor looks away and shrugs his hands. Then Ned pulls the duffel bag forward.
I want you to play. There's still time.
You said that wasn't your team.
You've never even seen us play before.
Yeah, look, I was wrong. Okay, it turns out I was wrong about pretty much everything.
Connor lifts his brow.
Not everything.
The redhead holds up his finger.
You don't have to pick a side, Connor. You don't have to be one thing or the other. You can be everything.
I'm not sure I can play for them. For Weasel. For the coach.
It's not for them. You're not playing for them. You're playing for us. It's my team if you're playing on it. Reveal to them who you are. If you dare.
Ned leans into the hatch, smiling. The athlete looks up at his friend.
Our team, yeah?
Connor rises. Then the two boys run down the dock towards shore.
Always at the foot of the photographs. That's me there. Snug as a thug in a mug.
Back in the stadium, bright lights illuminate the pitch as the teams play, the players in black and white scoring a try. A scoreboard shows Mountford College 12, Woodhill College 0. Now the teams lock arms to face off in a scrum, the ball rolling in between their straining legs. A Mountford boy gains possession and tears down the field before being tackled. They restart play with a lineout, a Mountford player easily leaping up for the ball and passing it to a receiver. The boys in black and white continue to control the ball. Now the scoreboard shows Mountford with 21 and Woodhill still scoreless. At the halftime break, the Woodhill players and their coach trudge down a long hallway to their dressing room. Connor and Ned stand on the far end of the dressing room, stone-faced and motionless, as the team files in the door. Pascal positions himself in front of the other boys, his hands in his pockets.
Connor, what can we do for you?
Night again. Sorry about that, lads.
Your mind is shot, right? You're all over the place. I understand that.
Connor twists his mouth.
I wasn't shot.
Well, at this point, Connor, we all heard about the thing.
The thing?
The thing.
The thing.
The thing! The thing! The thing! Look at you. It's not your fault. But you cannot fit into this team.
Since when?
Since, look at, you're incompatible.
Incompatible according to who?
Us.
He turns to the other boys.
According to all of us, that right, lads?
No one meets the coach's eyes. Connor looks at his teammates.
I don't know if you heard why I left my old school.
Victor gazes over.
Yeah, we heard you got in some fights.
I don't know if you heard why I was fighting.
Victor shakes his head.
I was fighting everyone who found out who I was. Every last one of them. But they kept coming, and I couldn't stop them coming, and I couldn't fight them all. I couldn't stay and keep denying it, so I ran away to our school. Thing is, lads, I'd like to stop running away, you know? I'm done with that. Thanks to Ned here, y'all know who I am. I'm the same me that I always was, and I really, really want to be a part of this team. I'm here, and I'm ready to play. So, if you want me on your side, just...
Wallace has been, filling in a tin and doing a perfectly good job.
Come on, Pascal.
No, I haven't, Pascal.
Believe in yourself, boy.
I believe I'm fucking shit at out half. I'm a winger, you know it.
Wallace, glaring at Pascal, steps across the room to join Connor and Ned.
Come on, Pascal, just put Wallace on the wing.
Well, that's a pity, Victor, because Wallace has just put himself on the bench. There is one coach on this team. One voice, not 15. You hear me?
Do you hear me, Victor?
Victor locks eyes with Connor. He crosses the room.
Congratulations, Victor. You're off the team at all.
Two more boys trop over to the other side.
At Tom Quinlan, Keith Chaffrey, you're both subbed off, your pair of agents.
Pascal shakes his head incredulously.
You pair of fucking tools. Lads, I'm sorry, but this lad has ruined your hard work for the year.
Connor gazes across at the remaining players. Two more join him.
Anyone else walks over to that side and they're gone too.
Another boy crosses. Spainer counts how many have crossed, then joins them.
I forfeit the game if I have to! I can do that!
More players walk over.
That's enough, I said! You hear me?
Aside from Weasel, the entire team now stands across the room from the coach. The boys all stare at the coach. Then he paces back toward where Weasel sits on a bench in the far corner.
God, for fuck's sake.
He looks at Weasel, who shrugs his hands. Later, in the bleachers, Ned climbs down the stairs and finds a seat. He asks the young woman in front of him, and she passes back a blue and yellow striped shirt. Ned stands and slips the Woodhill College shirt over his head. The view slides left, and a split screen shows Ned reading his essay on the right.
We all have that one thing we're ashamed of. The memory of one moment so embarrassing, we don't know if we'll ever be able to forget it. A single moment when not only do we betray everyone around us, but we betrayed ourselves too, in the most terrible way.
Yes, we all have that moment. But the pain of remembering the embarrassment begins to fade eventually, with the help of a good friend.
Connor catches a pass and gets tackled to the ground.
I will never forget that game for as long as I live. Connor was everywhere. Everyone noticed it. The determination to shut people up, to prove them wrong. What he was feeling spread throughout the team like a fever. People talked about it for months after.
Connor tumbles to the ground to score a try. The scoreboard shows Woodhill College with 5 points now. Connor misses the conversion kick. The two teams lock in a scrum, and Spainer swings around behind the tight nest of intertwined bodies. The ball rolls out of the scrum, and Spainer scoops it up, tossing it to Connor, who dashes on. The Woodhill team pass the ball as they wend their way down the pitch. Then Victor dashes past the try line and slides to the ground, scoring. In the stands, Mr. Sherry and his goateed friend from the gay bar slide in and sit next to Walter.
Connor's playing.
Yeah, young Ned found him.
Sherry nods nervously.
Well, he's a good kid, Ned.
Both men nod and look down at the game. Then Sherry swallows.
Walter, this is Arthur.
Hello, Arthur. Walter.
Walter reaches across to shake Arthur's hand.
Arthur's my fella.
The headmaster looks in Sherry's eyes.
We're a bit of an item.
Walter smiles, purses his lips, then knits his brow, and peers back across to peek at Arthur again. The headmaster calmly returns to gazing at the game as Sherry and Arthur smile coyly at each other. Below, a Woodhill boy tackles an opposing player.
Like I said, I don't think I'll ever be able to get over the embarrassment and the shame of what I did. But in a way, some good did come out of it.
Weasel steals the ball and runs.
That year, everyone in school learned the same lesson. Not to speak in a borrowed voice.
The coach cheers triumphantly from the sidelines as Weasel scores a try. Connor kicks, but misses again. Two players are hoisted up in a lineup, and the Mountford boys get possession. His teammates barge down the pitch, passing back and forth until the ball carrier is tumbled to the ground by a Woodhill player. The team slam together in a scrum, then Spainer grabs the freed ball and tosses it to Connor, who passes it to Wallace. Wallace tears off down the field, his mouth contorted from the strain. Pascal screams enthusiastically as Wallace sprints across the try line and dives to the grass to score. The scoreboard shows Mountford with 21 and Woodhill with 20. Pascal motions desperately for Victor to pick Tom Quinlan, the team's old place kicker, to handle the game-deciding conversion kick. Connor looks at Victor and dips his head earnestly. Then Victor nods back and throws Connor the ball. Pascal covers his eyes. Connor catches a rugby tee and sets it in the grass, balancing the ball on top. From the stands, Ned steeples his hands, his eyes wide. Connor backs up, eyeing the goalposts in the far distance. At the essay contest.
You know, one single year before, I'd have given everything I owned for that kick to be missed. But people change.
Connor rears back, then runs up and kicks the ball. It soars through the air, curving to the left, then arching down and gliding directly between the two white goalposts. Pascal stares numbly, and Walter, Sherry, and Arthur leap to their feet, cheering. Ned claps and gazes around at the joyous crowd, grinning broadly. Connor smiles, turns from the goal, and heads off the pitch, striding over to the coach. Pascal sits on the sidelines, his head bowed and his eyes glistening with tears, as Connor reaches out a hand. The coach shakes the offered hand, his shiny eyes gazing up apologetically at the boy. Connor heads away as the bearded man holds back sobs. Ned and Connor hug tightly, and behind them in the stands, Sherry applauds and exhales deeply, then motions to Arthur with his head that they should leave, and the two slip away. Connor and Ned continue embracing as Woodhill College teammates, classmates, and fans all gather around them and join in, grinning, jumping up and down giddily, and cheering triumphantly. Yellow slides in from the left and blue from the right, splitting the view. Remaining opening titles. Fionn O'Shea, Nicholas Gollitzine, Michael McCallahan, Mo Dunford, Rory O'Connor, Jay Duffy, Mark Lavery, Jamie Hallahan, Ardal O'Hanlon, Amy Huberman, and Andrew Scott. Casting Director, Louise Keeley. Original music by John McPhillips. Costume designer, Kathy Strachan. Hair and makeup designer, Louise Meyer. Production designer, Ferdia Murphy. Edited by John O'Connor. Director of photography, Cuthell Waters. Produced by Rebecca O'Flanagan, Robert Walpole. Written and directed by John Butler. A dedication reads, "For my sisters." Jimmy the Bus. The characters and events depicted in this motion picture are fictional. Any similarities to actual persons living or dead are purely coincidental. Copyright 2016, Treasure Entertainment Limited.